97.5 The Fanatic.
Pleasant Monday evening to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe and happy and healthy, and welcome into the post. Yes, Tyler Zuli in for Devon Givens. Devon's been here since, I don't know, probably 7 a.m. this morning, so I guess our boss has decided. You know, Devon's been here for quite some time. He filled in for the best show ever. He did the extended show leading up to Sixers basketball, did pregame, did postgame. I think we can let Devon get out of here for at least a little bit. He's done his duty and then some for us here at the Fanatic today. So I will be with you from now until midnight as we go in the post after a Sixers win, the first win of the regular season for the Sixers as they beat the Indiana Pacers in a game. It happened, and the W was accumulated. Here's the thing. By the way, 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. We are here until midnight. We do have a lot to get into. Of course, we're going to break down the Phillies and them getting to the World Series. That's going to be a bulk of our conversation today. I know that this is in the post. We are going to talk Sixers-Pacers, but do not hesitate to join us to discuss the Phillies going to the World Series, because you've got two guys here, myself, Ray Dunn's hanging out with us until midnight. He's in my seat. You're going to get leftovers from him at 11:45. You've got two guys here tonight that probably collectively have about 50% voice power left. Ray, you were traversing all over the city this weekend. I was on with D-Lineham during the game. I left with about 45 minutes left to get ready for the Flyers, and I was screaming like a madman getting ready for the Flyers game on the Bryce Harper home runs. We'll talk all about it throughout the rest of the night. But we do have to start with the Sixers, a 120-106 victory over the Indiana Pacers. And the reason that I say it was a game, and I say that kind of facetiously, of course, is because of the fact that people are going to be on Twitter, they're going to join us on the airwaves, and you're going to see a 14-point victory pretty much from gate to gate, some early lead changes, some early game ties, but pretty much from like the early portions of the second quarter on, it was gate to gate for the Sixers. And you're going to see people say, well, it was the Indiana Pacers. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. And I saw a lot of comments on Twitter already, it's about time, with some expletives thrown in there. And all of those things are true. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you're wrong. I will say, much like I was talking about with the Phillies, when people would call me and Ray and I would do shows on the weekend and Devon and I would do shows during the week, and people would say, well, it's just the Diamondbacks, or it's just the Cubs, or it's just the Nationals, or it's just the blah, 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 blah. It's just the Indiana Pacers, right? But you play who you play when you play them, and the alternative is way worse. And in tonight's game against the Pacers, the alternative would be way worse. There's a lot of things that I watched in today's basketball game that need to get cleaned up. And if I'm being 100% honest with you, I'm keeping it 100% with you tonight, the Sixers won because of James Harden. James Harden was tremendous tonight. Now, you got contributions from your bench. 36 bench points, the most they've scored this season in the first four games of the season. You got 13 from Niang, his best performance. And then contributions, 11 from Melton, 6 from House, 5 from Harrell. And overall, it was a decent team win. But if I'm being truly, truly, truly honest with you, you won because of James Harden. Not because he scored 45 points, not because he came a rebound shy of a triple-double, but because when you needed James Harden to step up the most, James Harden stepped up the most. Kind of not in the same ilk, because it was a regular season game 4 versus NLCS game 5, but when you needed somebody to step up, Bryce Harper stepped up. When you needed somebody to step up tonight in this game against the Indiana Pacers, James Harden stepped up in a critical way. He was 10 of 18 from the field. He was 5 of 10 from beyond the arc. He was one rebound short of a triple-double with 11 assists and 9 rebounds. I thought that this was as close to a vintage James Harden game as you're going to get. Because obviously you're not going to get Rockets James Harden. Tom talked about it as the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame will one day call his name in probably unanimous factor, right? He's going to get all the votes. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's going to get all the votes. And nobody's going to bat an eye. You're not going to get that guy anymore. The guy you're asking for is a consistent James Harden. And the guy that I saw tonight for the Philadelphia 76ers is the guy that when Devon asked the question last week, who do you expect to be, or was asked the question, who do you expect to be the number two scorer for this Sixers team, was the reason I was confident in saying James Harden. A healthy offseason, a workout plan that saw him drop some weight, a decision to take less money for the benefit of the team, to bring in guys like House and, of course, Tucker and Melton. To have all of these guys in the mix, all of those decisions that he made for the betterment of the team gave me a confidence level that he was going to be the second leading scorer on this team. Tyrese Maxey had an uncharacteristically off night. He was 3 of 11. He only scored 8 points. Wasn't a tremendous game from Tyrese Maxey in 38 minutes. But the reason that I felt confident in answering that question as James Harden was the expectation for games such as tonight. Not to necessarily be the leading scorer. He had 29. Joel Embiid was second with 26. He took 13 shots, 9 of 9 from the free throw line. It wasn't the expectation to be the leading scorer on every night, but it was expectations for whatever the Sixers need James Harden to be, that's what he is going to be. And what the Sixers needed James Harden today to be was to be the scorer that they needed him to be. I said this last season, and I refer to it again, and this is in the most positive, most respectful way possible. I expect James Harden to be the chameleon for the Sixers. And what do I mean by him being a chameleon? Is he can adapt to what the circumstances are around him, like a chameleon does. He adapts to his environment around him, and that's how, you know, you see chameleons like change colors, right? And they adapt to like being on a rock and being on a tree and being on, you know, sand. You know what I'm talking about? They adapt to their surroundings. That in the most positive, not, I don't mean it in a detrimental way at all. James Harden has the opportunity to be the chameleon for this team and to be the guy that they need him to be on an individual night. And the guy that they needed him to be tonight was their leader. And he stepped up in that dimension. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Listen, I know we just hit the airwaves. We do have some bills to pay, so we'll be right back. We're going to get into more of this game tonight. The Sixers improved to 1-3. They get their first victory of the 2022-23 campaign with a 120-106 victory over the Indiana Pacers. We're going to break down the Phillies NLCS, the whole thing in its entirety. We'll talk more about Game 5, but we're going to break the whole thing down in its entirety because you got two guys that talked about living off of vibes last weekend, and those vibes remain for this team. At 11:45, we'll talk to Ray Dunn. Well, we'll talk to Ray Dunn before that, but we'll get his leftovers at 11:45. 610-632-0975. Tyler Zulli, Ray Dunn, we go in the post. We're in for Devon Givens. We take you until midnight on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to In the Post here on 97.5 The Fanatic. 10:36 as we take you until midnight. Tyler Zulli and Ray Dunn as we're in for Devon Givens as we react to the 120-106 victory for the Philadelphia 76ers over the Indiana Pacers. We're going to get into the Phils in just a second. But Ray, I'm a big proponent of giving credit where credit is due. And sometimes you see a tweet that's just so good, so spot on, that I have to give them credit. So this tweet comes from Sully at KP Sullivan. Sully, this is an amazing tweet. Dear NYCFC fans, That's the opponent the Union are going to play this weekend.
Oh, I'm tapped in.
In the Eastern Conference Finals.
I got you.
Says, dear NYCFC fans, sorry that you guys got such a small number of tickets. So there's like a reserve for the away team.
Yeah, I saw
stadium.
It last Thursday and I was up
the,
in the...
The number the is minuscule.
As it should.
For this game. It's like one. I don't even know if it's the full normal section. It might be half that section. So sorry you guys got such a small number of tickets. We'd have moved that match to our baseball stadium to better accommodate you. But unlike yours, ours is still in use.
Oh, that's good.
It's an incredible tweet. Hashtag dupe, hashtag Red October. That's an unbelievable tweet.
That's amazing. That's A1 word.
Because it works on two levels. So obviously NYCFC fans are either Yankee or Mets fans. Probably Yankees fans with, you know, them playing, you know, a lot of games in Yankee Stadium. And that is where step number two comes in, is because they are such a dumpster fire organization that they don't even play all their home games in a soccer stadium. They've got a resort to go play at Yankee Stadium where the optics suck so bad. That's a tremendous double whammy tweet. Great work, Sully. Unbelievable work. By the way, hello, Ray.
Hey,
good Monday
you?
Evening to you. It's good to be back with you. I got to ask you a question before we get into the Phillies. You and I were talking, was it last weekend? Was it 2 weekends ago?
I think it was last weekend.
Last weekend, you and I had a conversation where we said we are strictly running on vibes, and you more than me, because you had been going to the games, you had been like gallivanting through the city. I know you've recovered, but this weekend did a number on you.
Oh, yes, it did.
You were amongst the fans yesterday.
Man of the people, some might say.
I've heard that to be true. So before we even get into the game, I got to ask you your experience. I was here. I celebrated on my own in our freezing cold studio. Now, I wasn't alone. I had D-Linum was here, Matt Manark was here, Dan Fritz was here. So I celebrated in my own way. But I got to ask you, before we even get to the game, how'd you celebrate?
I celebrated with my family up in the 300s. We had celebration. We stuck around to see most of the post-game interviews, obviously the presentation of the trophy. And then it was down to the cars, regroup with everyone, say our goodbyes. And then my girlfriend and I went hustling over to Xfinity to see some friends, enjoy a couple of ice-cold beverages. And then we made it down to City Hall. So we were trying to cover all the bases yesterday, and it was very tiring. We were quickly out. By the time we got home.
You had yourself a good weekend, though.
Oh, beautiful weekend.
And we are, once again, thriving on the vibes. All right, so you know the Phils are going to the World Series. We know that by now. I mean, unless you live in like a monk or like a hermit in total isolation, you know the Phillies are going to the World Series.
It'd be pretty cool if we broke that news to someone. They just turned on the radio.
And they're like, wait, well, hold on, what?
Breaking.
The Phillies are... Yeah, so by now you know the Phillies are going to the World Series. We have 900 different things that we can break down. But I have to start with the obvious and the most paramount to the turnaround of that game. I have to ask you a question. How many moments can this city be given by one man in one postseason? Reese Hoskins had 3 home runs in the last 2 nights. Kyle Schwarber hit a home run in game 4. Pitching's been great, other than a select group of players that maybe both throw with their left hand. Pitching's been awesome. We're going to get into Rob Thompson, because I've questioned Rob Thompson at a lot of turns this postseason, and he's proven me wrong every single time, and it's why he's the manager and I'm not. But how many moments can one human being provide a city in the span of a single postseason and continue to outperform expectations the way that Bryce Harper has continued to perform expectations? This man is putting together video game highlight reel. I did this in MLB The Show, and then somebody says, shut up, I don't care. Turn your video games off. This dude is doing it in real life. How many players would you rather trust at this moment with the game on the line and the bat in their hand on this planet than Bryce Harper? Because I cannot give you many guys on the in the world that I would give I would prefer in a situation with the game on the line and it be the most critical paramount moment than Bryce Harper at this point.
At this juncture, right this very
right this
moment.
Second. So
nobody.
I'm going to give you an example, a comparison to NBA playoffs a few years ago. In the NBA playoffs, the year that the Toronto Raptors knocked the Sixers out on the quadruple doink, there was not a better player on the planet than Kawhi Leonard. He's not the best player in the NBA, but for that stretch of time, that season, and especially in that postseason, there was not a better player on the planet than Kawhi Leonard. He could have shot that shot from the Hubble Space Telescope and made it. He could have shot that shot from the seventh row of the upper deck, and I'd have been like, well, that's the end of the Sixers season. Because he was that good. I'm getting to the point, and I think a lot of people are at the point, where Bryce Harper is on Kawhi Leonard level, just adrenaline-seeking, I'm going to put the team on my back and absolutely drag this unit to the highest of highs. And Middleton said it at the end of the game yesterday. He goes, he might be underpaid at this point. The things that Bryce Harper is doing are unprecedented. To step up with the game in the balance. JT Realmuto does a really good job of driving a ball into the outfield for a leadoff base hit. And up steps Bryce Harper. And I'm going to ask you in a second, but I'm going to tell you because I feel like I'm just giving like verbal, like word vomit here because I'm so excited. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but like I don't think I slept well yesterday because I was so excited. And up steps Bryce Harper. And my first and only thought was there was nothing in my brain other than put together a good at bat. Get on base, extend the inning. I'm not asking for a home run. A walk would have sufficed. A base hit would have sufficed. Quite frankly, if it wasn't Bryce Harper, you probably consider bunting in that situation, but you're not going to do it with Bryce Harper, right? We're going to talk about bunting in situations in a little bit. But the only thought process that went through my mind, Robert Suarez has been legit all season long, posted a 2.2 ERA, much like the entirety of that bullpen for the San Diego Padres. And my only thought process when he stepped up to the plate was continue to work the count, extend the inning, find a way to get on base. Never in my wildest dreams could I ask this guy to step up to the plate when it was cold and rainy. And you had to use every ounce of grown man's strength to put a ball over the wall, And yet, when he stepped up to the plate with a runner on first and nobody out, I had an air of supreme confidence that he was going to do something productive. He surpassed my wildest expectations. In that at bat and in this entirety of this postseason, he and this team have surpassed my wildest expectations.
It's that confidence that you just said. That's what I had. I was sitting there, and I'm not going to lie to you. When that seventh inning happens and things start to unravel, I was not a pleasant person. I was very upset. I had kind of gotten quiet. I was sitting there, and the ballpark kind of followed lead with that of just being kind of quiet and not really into it. But you felt something special about to happen when JT gets on. Once JT gets on and Harper came up, I think everyone looked at one another and was like, we're about to witness something amazing just because of the way he's played and the way he's made you feel throughout this run. Now, again, like you say, you couldn't script a better moment for him. You couldn't have scripted a better finish to that at-bat than that home run. If you made a movie about Bryce Harper, I think even movie producers would be like, okay, come on. He's not putting a home run out in this situation. That doesn't seem like anything that you could ever expect from what was coming, but yet it happened.
The storylines that you used a great it's a great reference there. It's a great analogy. The storylines that are so far-fetched that when you go to the movie studio, and movie studios will produce anything because all they care about is the green, right? And you know, that's how some terrible movies get made, because they know they're going to make money. And more importantly, like terrible sequels, like, you know, Fast and the Furious 8004.
What does Yvonne say? Leave it alone?
Leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
That's exactly right. Leave it alone. But the point is, when you have a storyline like this that I know for a fact, even Disney would go, all right, we Disney up all of our true events, but come on, dude. Really? A home run in that spot? How do we sell this to the audience? This is where sports transcend the greatest moments in real life. Bryce Harper, prior to that home run, was going to be the National League NLCS MVP. Because he had been unbelievable all series long and all postseason long. 1-for-4 in the game against Yu Darvish in game one. But one of the two big swings, one of the home runs, he and Kyle Schwarber hit home runs, they win 2-0. 2-for-4 in the loss to the Padres, another extra base hit, a double. 1-for-4 in game three on Friday night. 1-for-4 probably statistically was his worst game at the plate. Didn't matter. They won the game 4-2. 2-for-4 on Saturday night in game four, where they win 10-6. Two doubles, two RBIs. Heading into that at bat, 1-for-3 with an RBI and one strikeout in the entirety of the series. Bryce Harper was going to win NLCS MVP prior to that happening. And then he comes up with that. Then he comes up with a moment of a lifetime. And Joe Davis said it perfectly on the broadcast. The swing of his life. I don't even know if the most wide-eyed, rose-colored glass-wearing, eternal optimist Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, Flyers, Union are going to win the respective championships every year, sports radio caller. And I've got one in mind, and I love the guy, and I'm not going to shout him out, because that, you know, I don't want to, you know, put him on the spot like that. But even the sports radio caller that hits those marks doesn't foresee the way that this game plays out. The rain is persistent. It picks up in the sixth. You were there. We were only watching on TV. It looked pretty gross heading into the seventh. Dean Lineham and I were on the air. The first thing I said was, once Wheeler clears this inning, the bottom of the sixth, once Darvish clears this inning, the bottom of the sixth, which it looked like he was progressing towards, they should postpone the game. Not postpone. They should delay the game. The field looked awful. It was reminiscent of that game five in the World Series in 2008. I don't know about you. You were sitting there. It was probably cold and rainy and gross, and you probably felt the same thing, I imagine.
Yeah, I was sitting undercover in the 300s, and the rain was still hitting me because it was coming in. Like, it was one of those misty kind of sideways moving things where it wasn't like the torrential sideways rain, but it was the way it was pushing onto the field. So it was an obnoxious type of rain. And then the way it picked up, you could kind of see that they might have been a little behind on manicuring it and taking care of it by the time that seventh inning came around. And I was more concerned when it got to the seventh of, oh my goodness, the Phillies are going to play this inning to completion, and they're going to put this in delay after the Padres take the lead. They took 10 minutes to really work on the field after that top of the seventh, so it wasn't as bad, but it was bad in that seventh. It was starting to get to the point where you see, you know, I'm looking around, and I was sitting with my girlfriend, my mom, my sister, and chatter amongst them was like, are people leaving? Are people, like, where are they going? Like, the seats, you started to see some empty seats because people were going for cover a little bit. You had the standing room start to get even more tightly packed because it had gotten that level of rain.
This was a game that more talented teams lose. I've watched more talented teams lose kind of games like this where it gets sloppy, or the conditions worsen, or something happens where you don't foresee an element, like an element that is out of your control. Injury, weather, ejection. I mean, I guess ejection's kind of in your control, but, you know, ego trip umpires, who knows? This is the kind of game that I've seen more talented teams allow to slip away. The Phillies right now are playing on such an emotional roller coaster high that, like you said, even after they tie the game and they take the lead, the moment JT gets on, you are feeling comfortable with Bryce Harper at the plate. And you're not only feeling comfortable, you're feeling immensely comfortable because this man has been one of the elite postseason hitters that I've seen in a long time. Let me just give you some numbers really quickly. Bryce Harper has 43 at-bats this postseason. He has 18 hits. That's ridiculous. That is a 419 batting average. Of those 18 hits, 11 are extra base hits. 6 doubles and 5 home runs. He has 11 RBI. His OBP, he is getting on 4 every 9 plate appearances. 444. He's slugging almost 1,000. His slugging is 907. His OPS is almost is over 1.35. That's generational type numbers. What Bryce Harper did and has done in this postseason is truly one of the all-time elite runs. And it's not done. This team's going to the World Series. I put out a tweet yesterday or earlier today. Now, Ray, you're of the same generation as me. There's certain movies that stick out in our certain that we grew up with. Are you familiar with The Emperor's New Groove?
Yes.
All right. So do you know the scene where he's a llama and he and Paco are tied to the tree and they're floating towards the end of the waterfall?
Yes.
And they run down all the things that are facing them. And then he just goes, bring it on. I put out a tweet today that said, Astros been to the World Series 4 times in 6 years, haven't lost a game in the 2022 postseason, having elite offense, stellar bullpen, and great starting pitching. Phillies heavy dogs to win the series. Bring it on.
I love it. I love it.
I have questioned this team at every step of the way. Now, let me rephrase that. Almost every step of the way. I predicted the Phillies to win in 3 against the Cardinals. They did it in 2. I predicted the Braves in 5 just because I thought that they were a better team. They won in 4. The Phillies did 1-4. Picked the Padres in 7. Phillies knocked them off the planet, basically, in 5. Who am I to pick against this team at this point?
Some would say you should.
Are the Astros better than the Phillies, objectively speaking?
Yes.
We all can sit here and agree upon that. But what the difference that this team has seems like fate at this point. I think this is going to be a good series. I think it's going to be a really good series because there's a lot of people outside of Philadelphia that just go, oh, the Astros are set, 9-0 or 7-0 now in the postseason. Astros in 5. And yeah, the Astros are the better team. But the Phillies got something weird going on. We'll talk more about it on the other side. We're going to talk about managers as well because I got to give Rob Thompson a lot of praise. And Bob Melvin, what are you thinking, dude? Bob Melvin deserves a lot of flack for how the Padres lost that game and how they've lost some of their other games this postseason. 610-632-0975. Of course, we are in the post here on the Fanatics, so we break down the 120-106 Sixers win over the Indiana Pacers. Ray will have our leftovers in about 45 minutes. We take you until midnight. I'm Tyler Zulli. That's Ray Dunn. We're into in for Devon Givens on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The Fanatic. Clock hour here on 97.5 The Fanatic as we go in the post. Tyler Zulli and Ray Dunn, we're in for Devon Givens. We take you until midnight this evening. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Ray, you know when a, have you ever had a young child try to tell you a story, but they're so excited to tell you the story that like they just have so much they want to say in that story that the sentence doesn't get finished before they move on to the next sentence?
A lot of times, yes.
Right. So I feel that way right now. I feel like a child trying to tell somebody a story and not being able to piece everything together because I want to get so many words out about this Phillies team that I'm finding myself having to check myself to not just scream into the oblivion. And the oblivion in this case being the microphone.
It's funny you mention that because I've talked to a number of people who over the weekend were at games and, you know, want to know about the experience because I was there, but love hearing how everyone else experienced it. And that was the most common response where I'm speechless or they started and they started rolling with it. And they go, oh, wait, I forgot to tell you about this. Or, oh, my goodness, this. Or,
yeah,
did you see this? Or did you see that tweet about this? I was there. I'm like, okay.
And then Harper and then Suarez. And then he went to Suarez and they didn't throw Hader. And they and Schwarber hit the home run. And Hoskins again. And it's like I said, it's like verbal word vomit. Because we're so over the moon about how this happened. And I think it's a combination of two things. One thing that I talked about on Saturday and another thing that we've talked about for a while. The thing we've talked about for a while was this is unexpected. I don't think anybody anticipated this. Some of us would have said, you know, they're going to go to the NLCS. I myself said they're going to go to the NLDS and lose to the Atlanta Braves. I'm not sure there were many people that were saying not only were they going to go to the World Series, but they were going to thrive the way that they've thrived, compete the way that they've competed, and to a point, dominate the way that they've dominated. I think that's step one. Step two is, I talked about on Saturday the intensity of the moment. And what I meant by that was, like I said, I was saying on Saturday, on Friday night, I was with a bunch of buddies, and the conversation died out right around the fifth or sixth inning, right around when Ranger came out of the game and Topper went to the bullpen. And all of a sudden, it wasn't as lighthearted and jovial as it was at the beginning. It was very serious. I was with my dad on Saturday night, and we had a lot of really good baseball conversation. I like to believe both of us are pretty well-versed in the game of baseball. But it was very locked in as things got, you know, especially after the 4-run top of the first and the 3-run bottom of the first, Phillies tied up, like right about that fifth inning when they tied it up, it became locked in. Same thing with when D and I and Matt were on the air yesterday, it became very locked in. And so my whole point with that is you don't realize the complexity, the intensity, and the emotional value of these high leverage games and high leverage innings, and not only high leverage innings, but high leverage at bats, and not only high leverage at bats, but high leverage pitches until you're in the moment. And you don't really respect them and appreciate them until A, you're in the moment, or B, you've been withheld from that moment for a long period of time. And we as Phillies fans right now have both because we're in the moment. And it's not like, listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if the Phillies made 4 World Series in 6 years, I would take it any lighter. It's an impressive run that the Houston Astros are on right now. Trash cans or not, it's an impressive run that they're on right now. But you starve a city for not just a championship run for 13 years, but a playoff run for over a decade. And I think that those individual pitches, those individual moments, those individual innings, they start to mean more to you. And you realize what the intensity of a situation is when you're in it or when you don't have it and you're starved for it. And right now, this city is witnessing and experiencing both of those things happening simultaneously.
Yeah, I had done a story on 2007 and what it was like then, and that was my best comparison to this prior to the run that no one saw coming, because I think a lot of people, when they're talking about the roar of the crowd, they're talking about the excitement around the team and just the general population of people who don't always care about baseball coming back to this team, it feels a lot more like the beginning of that 07-11 run than maybe the middle parts of it where people had been invested, people had knew what was happening. Like the kind of community quickly gathering and people quickly caring. You know, you're scrolling your social media feed, seeing people that weren't talking Phillies a couple months ago talking about it now. And it's a beautiful thing because it's that community of fans coming together.
Yep.
And that's what's bringing you this collective roar at the ballpark, this collective experience. But I think that, for me, when I think about this run, it's so much of those who have been passionate about it for the entire time are the ones that have been withheld from it and really have that emotional response you're talking about, that second part you're talking about. And the first one to me is the people who forgot, oh, hey, this is how a baseball game goes. This is how this happens, how this playoff baseball happens. And I think those two things coming together in unison is what's generating this buzz.
It's an insane buzz. Like, obviously, 2017 Eagles buzz, you're never going to match that. In the history of the rest of this city, you are never going to match that from a sports perspective. Because heading into this World Series, the Phillies won a World Series. Heading into the next time the Flyers or the Sixers make their prospective championships, those two teams have won their championships. The MLS Cup is a little bit different, but soccer just started to kind of gain the foothold. The MLS soccer, I should say, because obviously Premier League and La Liga and things like that, but MLS soccer just really started to gain the foothold in this city not that long ago. And it is a rabid fan base, but it's not starved the way that other fan bases have been starved. You will never, ever, 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 ever in this city again match the intensity of the first Super Bowl in this city. I'm not trying to get there. I am thrilled that we've gotten to a sold-out Citizens Bank Park every night for playoff games. I'm thrilled that we've gotten to the point, because think about just the other CS. Look across the conference, the leagues, and go up the 95. Take the train up to New York. If I wasn't here, and I know it was kind of rainy and gross, I would have seriously considered taking the train up to the Bronx and going to game four, because tickets were like $35. And I know that it's totally different when you're on the verge of being swept versus being on the verge of going to the World Series. But the way that this city has rebought into baseball is beautiful, because playoff baseball is beautiful. And that's not just me saying that because I'm a baseball nerd. There are people that aren't even huge baseball fans. They're just Phillies fans because it's a Philadelphia sports team, that are so excited about this run. And it's really cool to see. It's really, really cool to see.
And it's just amazing, those people who will share everything that you've experienced but are coming to you to have that conversation of, oh my goodness, how did we get here? And really, how did we get here? And the group of people that are just jumping onto this, like you said, because they're Philadelphia sports fans. And they're not, you know, they might not have watched Familia pitch every night.
Sure.
And they're still having the same amount of joy, and it's a beautiful thing. I'm never one of the gatekeeping where if you weren't here for this,
there's no reason here to now. At this point.
Right. Jump on board, have so much fun with this. That's where you have nights like last night where, you know, wandering the city, you're Xfinity Live, just yelling at anyone, go Fightins, go Phils, just getting crazy, going down to City Hall, you know. My Lotto was out there, which was an incredible thing for the Philadelphia sports scene, but also just the sheer amount of people that, whether they were in the streets or whether they're pouring in to a local bar and just having a night and celebrating. We walked into Chipotle at the end of our experience at City Hall, and there's people getting crazy in there enjoying their night. And it's not the place you expect to go have a Phillies conversation, but sure enough,
but you did.
Here they are.
You certainly did.
Everyone's in Phillies uniforms. Everybody's having, you know, just a ball. And that, for me, you know, the baseball is beautiful, and it's always going to be beautiful. I'm going to enjoy baseball, whether it's a 100-loss team in June or it's this experience. But my goodness, is this experience just something else? And we never saw it coming.
Right. I revel. Now, listen, the Astros are beyond the cheating scandal. If you don't like the Astros because of it, and like, I'm not going to sway your opinion, that's not what I'm trying to tell you to do. I revel in watching this Houston Astros team baseball, play baseball, because they absolutely just decimate, dissect, and obliterate their opponents from so many different angles. Like, when you say the Houston Astros, a lot of people go, yeah, well, they cheat. Well, they're not anymore, at least not from what we can tell. But think about it. They've got a 38-year-old coming off major reconstructive arm surgery, having one of the best pitching seasons of his life. Their offense over the last couple of years has lost George Springer, Carlos Correa, there's one other big name. I forget off the top of my head. But it doesn't matter. And all they've done is continue to filter good players in. Their bullpen is elite. It's awesome. They've got four different dudes with like sub-3 ERAs this season. Dusty Baker's done a really good job with this team. I revel in watching teams like the Houston Astros play because on any given night, something amazing could happen. The other something amazing could happen any given night are teams like the Phillies, where they get, you know, ultra surface of the sun hot, and anything could happen on any given night. And it's not just Bryce. It's been a lot of Bryce. It's not just Bryce. I mean, I can't tell you at length how much I talked about Bryson Stott this weekend. At length, how much I have valued Brandon Marsh's defense. And that brings us to our next topic of conversation. I know it was fun to talk about, oh, take the interim tag off Rob Thompson. It was fun to talk about, hey, he got them into the playoffs. If he makes a little bit of a run, does he get considered for NL Manager of the Year? There is absolutely no doubt in my mind he has to be a finalist for NL Manager of the Year at this point. Because my thought, when I think about Manager of the Year, it's the same with Coach of the Year in all different sports. You get to a point where your team is so good, you're expected to win. You don't get credit for winning games that you're expected to win. Dave Roberts should not be up for Manager of the Year for the Dodgers.
Showalter.
See, Showalter's a little bit different because the Mets elevated their game. Now, granted, they spent a ton of money and they were expected to be good, but it was the first year that they elevated their game. But Roberts specifically, I don't think Aaron Boone has any right to be considered AL Manager of the Year. Quite frankly, even though I know that Dusty Baker's done a really good job, I don't think Dusty Baker should be considered for Manager of the Year because there is a threshold that once you climb it, it's just an expectation. It's like Bill Belichick doesn't get a lot of hype or didn't for a long stretch of, you know, NFL Head Coach of the Year. The same could be said for trying to think of like John Cooper to a point in the NHL. It's like, dude, you've got the Lightning. You're supposed to be good. But Rob Thompson, this was totally unexpected. And that brings me to my next point. And we'll talk more about that when the season ends, because I'm not ready to hand out awards just yet, other than World Series MVP, you know, once that all breaks down. But I have questioned Rob Thompson a lot this postseason. And this is coming from the guy, right? You and I did a show together, I know, where I talked about this. And I've talked about this from probably like late July, early August on, where I was ready to, once you went through all the required stuff, to give Rob Thompson. Basically, it was going to be, we have to do this. We have to have an outside candidate. You know what I mean? Like, you have to interview an external candidate before you take the interim tag off. It was really just going to be something they had to do. I was ready to give Rob Thompson the manager job for next season weeks ago. Now it's a foregone It was a foregone conclusion when they made the playoffs. They've made it official, you know, a couple weeks ago. There have been moves that Rob Thompson has made throughout this postseason that I did not think were good ideas. The removal of Zach Wheeler after 7 innings in game 1. Thought was a bad decision. Getting David Robertson up to start the 7th yesterday, or 2 days ago, excuse me, I did not think was the right decision. I thought that Noah Syndergaard should have pitched another inning. There have been moves throughout the postseason that I went, Not so certain about that one, Top. Noah Syndergaard starting against the Atlanta Braves. Thought it should have been Bailey Falter. Agreed with Bailey Falter getting the start in Game 4. It didn't work, but agreed with it nonetheless. Every time I've questioned Rob Thompson's decision-making in this postseason, he's proven to me as to why I sit in this seat and he sits on the top step of the dugout for the Phillies. Every decision, well, not every decision, because I think that if we're going to be truly picky, bringing in Brad Hand in Game 2 was a bad decision.
Correct.
Other than that, almost every decision that Rob Thompson has gone to has worked out in some capacity. And I got a guy on Twitter that tweets at me all the time. Anytime I question Rob Thompson's decision making, I get tweets and he goes, "How about we just let Rob Thompson manage?" And here's the thing. Part of my job, part of your job, right, is to be active on social media. It's not a requirement, but it's kind of a requirement.
It's one of those things. It's not there when they tell you it's your job, but you know
it's
part
of it. But it's part
of
the job for me to interact and give my thoughts on Twitter when I am not on the air. This is a 24/7 job. Well, you know, close to it.
This weekend, pretty much.
This weekend was pretty much a 24/7 job. Not that anybody cares what Tyler Zuli has to say, but it's part of my job to give my opinions as things are happening on social media. And if I think a decision is the wrong decision, I am going to take to Twitter and say, I'm not so sure that's the right call. But every time I've done that, and maybe to the credit of this guy that tweets at me to basically shut up, every time I've done that, Rob Thompson has told me to shut up. And I don't really care. This guy tells me to shut up. But Rob Thompson making the right decisions, I do care about, because it has helped this team and propelled this team, along with Herculean efforts from Bryce Harper, along with incredible pitching performances from Zach Wheeler, and quite frankly, really good bullpen performances from the entirety of this team, have propelled them into a World Series appearance. He stuck to his guns in Game 4 and said, listen, I'm not bringing Noah Syndergaard into a middle of an inning, and I want to get to Noah Syndergaard later in the game. I thought that was a bad decision. I thought he should have come into the game after Connor Brogdon, who, by the way, pitched extremely well.
Unbelievable.
In that game. Changeup was filthy in that game. The bullpen in Game 4 gave you 8 1/3 innings of 2 runs. And both of them came out of off the hand of Brad Hand. No pun intended. Both of them came from Brad Hand. Outside of the... Did he throw a full inning? Did he get out of that inning?
I want to say no. That's a feel fact, though.
Outside of however many outs he provided you, the bullpen was perfect in Game 4. When you needed them to be great, they stepped up and were great. And Rob Thompson made the right decisions by sending Connor Brogdon out there for a second inning and for a third inning. I thought it was a bad decision to pull Bilotti after 9 pitches. He brings in Hand. He does go the full inning, but it doesn't work. But Syndergaard comes in, gives you an inning and a third pitch as well. Robertson comes in after Syndergaard comes out of the game, gives you an inning and 2/3, 3 strikeouts on 5 outs. Zach Eflin comes in with a 4-run lead, shuts the door out of the pen. Every single decision, with the exception of the 2 times he's brought Brad Hand into the game, have been the right call. I thought that Zach Wheeler should have started the 7th. He did. The moment he gave up a hit, he took him out of the game. Yesterday's game. I cannot give enough credit to Rob Thompson for the strings that he has pulled throughout the postseason, with the exception of a few blips on the radar, and even that one, Brad Hand in Game 4 didn't come back to hurt them.
I think Rob Thompson's even surprised himself with how well his decision-making process worked out. I mean, the quote after the game, I want to say it was Game 4 on Saturday night, where he's like, you know, I really just keep looking both ways when I cross the street to make sure a bus doesn't hit me because of the good fortune I've had. Like, he realizes that he's making some gut calls that we're going to rip and we're not going to find correct, and that justifiably you can go the other way with. And hey, that's baseball. Right now, He's just pushing every single right button. Again, minus Brad Hand. I took my lumps on Saturday morning for saying I didn't enjoy Brad Hand as a pitcher. I'm not a Brad Hand guy.
This all boils down to, you had a guy, well, not all boils down, but the culmination of all of this is you had a guy who gave you five really good innings in game three on Friday night. Probably should have been able to pitch a sixth, but was hit with some bad fielding luck, gave up an earned run and an unearned run, but it was two errors, right? Gene Segura error, obviously can't predict the double play, but the error there would have gotten you to two outs the next at bat, would have gotten you out of the inning, or two at bats later would have gotten you out of the inning, whatever the case may be. And then the Reese Hoskins error does give you an unearned run, but Ranger Suarez pitched very, very well through five innings, and he made a difficult decision to pull Ranger Suarez after five innings. And now, I don't know if a sixth inning of work or not would have meant that he couldn't pitch last night, but he said, I want to ensure that we get this victory, and Robertson wasn't cutting it, and Ranger Suarez, he confidently brought Ranger Suarez into the game 2 days after pitching. Now, 2 days after pitching is usually your bullpen day, and he probably was available to throw. He was going to throw anyway. But you bring the guy in with confidence, and he shuts the door out of the pen on two pitches. That takes us to our final point of the night before we get to the leftovers. We're going to do this on the other side. What is Bob Melvin doing? I'm not going to complain. It helped the Phillies get to the World Series. But I got to talk about it on the other side. 610-632-0975. That's Ray Dunn. I'm Tyler Zulli. We go in the post. Again, if you wanted to talk about the Sixers victory tonight, a 120-106 victory over the Indiana Pacers, you are more than welcome to join us. We will talk about that. We'll get the leftovers in about 18 minutes from Ray at 1145. And we take you until midnight on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
One final segment for us here on 97.5 The Fanatic as we go in the post until midnight. Tyler Zulli and Ray Dunn as we're in for Devon Givens. In 10 minutes, we will get the leftovers from Ray as we catch up on what we missed throughout the afternoon and the evening as we broadcast the Sixers 120-106 victory over the Indiana Pacers. All right. I got to talk about this. By the way, if you want to get in on the Sixers conversation before we get out of here, you're more than welcome to. I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not complaining. Obviously, I'm not complaining. The Phillies are going to the World Series. But I have to discuss this as like a baseball fanatic because I have watched. Now, remember how I said earlier in the show, no one cares about your MLB The Show. Shut up. I've seen people manage MLB The Show seasons better than what I just witnessed. From a manager, by the way, who I have enormous respect for and I think is a tremendous manager. I mean, you get as much as you got out of $12 from the Oakland A's for all those years. You've earned my respect. But Bob Melvin cost the San Diego Padres at least one game in the NLCS this past week. It starts with the Bryce Harper at bat. Robert Suarez, as I mentioned, was really, really good this season. Posted a 2.7 ERA, struck out 61 hitters in 47 and two-thirds innings pitched. That's insane. I mean, that's like 12, 13 Ks per nine, something along those lines. Not going to do the math, but it's a lot, to put it that way. He was awesome his entire season. He gave up 12 earned runs in almost 48 innings pitched. He had also thrown two innings prior in the game. He pitched the sixth and seventh innings for the San Diego Padres. Now, I know that their bullpens were taxed because of the fact that, much like the Phillies, they had to get a lot of outs from their bullpen. In fact, their starter, Mike Clevinger, in the game prior, didn't get a single out. So I know their bullpen was taxed. But here is manager malpractice number one. The moment that Robert Suarez gives up the base hit to JT Realmuto, Bob Melvin should have sauntered up those steps and out of the dugout and taken him out of the game. Why? Again, I'm not complaining. I'm just curious. This is where my baseball mind goes. I'm just curious. Why was Josh Hader not ready to pitch in that situation? You traded a lot to get Josh Hader, even on a buy low, because Hader wasn't pitching well when they acquired him. You traded a lot for Josh Hader. You gave up Taylor Rogers, who was a good closer, and you gave up three prospects as well in the Josh Hader deal, something along those lines. But it was two of the prospects that you gave up, I believe, were fairly high prospects. It was and Denilson Lamet had pitched in the major leagues before, or had played the major leagues before. Not great numbers, but has pitched in the major leagues before. The amount of stuff that you gave up shouldn't even be a part of this conversation. It's just an added piece to this conversation. Stop overthinking things. Josh Hader needed to be in the ballgame in that particular situation. I got to ask you, you were there, Ray. Was that the conversation when Bryce Harper went to the plate, or part of the conversation when Bryce Harper went to the plate?
Immediately.
Why Josh Hader was not in the ballgame?
Immediately the thought of, okay, Hader's up in the pen. I assume Suarez, especially when Suarez gives up the hit. Like, at that point, okay, he's served his purpose. Like, he's
pitched well, too.
Yeah.
Heading into that inning.
Give us the marquee matchup of Hader-Harper. And that's what I expected. That's where I thought it was headed. And I was waiting for it to, you know, okay, when are they going to announce this? When is it going to happen? And then, okay, Harper's going to bat against Suarez. This feels like I'm showing up to your funeral here, but go ahead, try it.
I was texting with a buddy earlier today, and I used this comparison. I want to know if you think it's fair. Now, the situation was not as massive, but it was a winner-go-home situation. Do you remember a few years ago? Probably more than a few years ago now. The last time the Baltimore Orioles were in the playoffs.
That's where I thought you were going with this.
Buck Showalter was the manager of the team. And Zach Britton was unhittable that season. Zach Britton posted one of the all-time great bullpen seasons, like relief pitcher seasons, of all time in his career. That year, he was an all-star. He pitched in 69 games, saved 47, led the league in saves with 47 saves, and posted a .54 ERA. Finished fourth in the AL Cy Young Award. That's how good he was. And instead, Buck Showalter went to Ubaldo Jimenez, and the Orioles lost the wild card game. This is up there. We should be talking. I know that it was 3-1, and it's not win or go home. Well, I guess it is win or go home, but it's not. You're not going to advance with a victory. It's just prolonging your season. This is up there with miserable manager decisions. Bob Melvin should be shamed for that decision to not bring Josh Hader into that game. Again, for like the 17th time today. I'm not complaining because the Phillies are going to the World Series is part of it. But how does that happen?
I'm still in utter shock we didn't see it happen. And we didn't see Hader out there. It only makes sense. And the baffling Hader storylines that now contribute to this Phillies season are quite fantastic.
They really are.
Hader giving up two home runs to Veerling Bohme that ends up being massive lift into the postseason for the Phillies when all things are said and done. Hader being traded by the Brewers and the Brewers folding.
Yep.
And just totally collapsing. And then Hader watching as Harper sends one over the fence, which those last two. The Brewers making the trade, okay, you got a lot back. Still, when you're trying to sell a product of we're trying to compete this year, confusing. This one, the Melvin one's the most baffling of all of them.
I don't get it. And then he follows it up. Now, I don't know if this is entirely on him or if it was a decision that was made by the hitter himself. You have runners on first and second. David Robertson leaves the game with one out. He gets one out, walks two, and the Phillies turn to Ranger Suarez. I am like the last of a dying breed of my generation that believes small ball can help you win baseball games. I am not going to scream it to the heavens because I know that I'm not going to win this conversation anymore, but I believe that there still is a place in baseball for small ball. That place is not with runners on first and second and one out. I know that it was slippery. I know that, you know, maybe an errant throw happens. But Ranger Suarez is one of the better fielding pitchers across Major League Baseball. And you bunted. All of these things put together don't make for like a all-time that this is a stupid decision. But each and every one of them factored into it being a stupid decision. So you bunted to move your runners up to second and third with two outs. I don't get it. If there were no outs, it would make sense. With two outs, it doesn't make, with one out, excuse me, it doesn't make any sense. You do that, fine. You do that with Manny Machado coming up or Juan Soto coming up, makes a little bit difference. Josh Bell coming up, a guy that can, you know, win a game with one swing of the bat or change the course of a game with one swing of the bat. I could at least be swayed into it happening. But you bunted with one out to move runners up 90 feet to bring Austin Nola to the plate. Austin Nola, who had one hit in the series, one hit in the entirety of the series, did a good job with the Padres pitching staff. Going to give him credit for the defensive plays that he's made and the games that he called. But this guy had one hit, and he had two in four, excuse me, 9 and 40 at-bats, but he had one hit in 3, 7, 11, 15, 18 at-bats heading into the series, or heading into the at-bat. What on earth would possess you to think he was going to be the guy that was going to come through with a clutch deliverable hit? It doesn't make any sense. Bob Melvin, I got to be honest with you. There were some stupid decisions that you made this week, and they culminated with some stupid decisions that you made in the final game of the NLCS. Just awful decisions. They really were.
It's, again, it's just mind-blowing. That one especially, like, and I'm with you, there is a place and a time for the bunt, and we can all appreciate that. But really, looking at that, you have to, at that situation, try and put something in play to make something happen. That bunt, you're giving away an out. You have two outs.
You've got two left in your season, and you have to, listen, you're looking to extend the season as long as you possibly can. And the only outcome that would shorten the season more than a bunt, a sacrifice bunt in that situation, would have been a double play. And if you're that scared to hit into a double play to end the season, you are scared to the point where you have no chance. It just didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me. 610-632-0975. We're going to get to the leftovers. What do you think? Should we get to the leftovers? Should we take some calls?
Let's take some calls.
All right, let's go to Jay in Westchester up next on 97.5 The Fanatic. And real quick, if you can do me a favor, Ray, we're having some issues with this phone. Can you just punch up Jay for us, please? Jay, what's going on, man?
Yeah, I think you're overlooking a couple things in Bob Melvin's defense.
Okay.
When Harper came up, Melvin is not accustomed to using Hader for six outs.
Agree.
Which he would have been in a position to do.
Correct.
But he has to use him for at least three.
Yep.
Now, the two guys right after Harper hit left-handers extremely well.
Very well. You're right.
So it wasn't just Harper he had to worry about.
But
he had two other guys that were equally a problem.
I agree with you that both the two guys behind him hit lefties better or well, and that would be an issue. But here's my thing, Jay. When you're playing in a winner-go-home game and you're in a situation where you have to try to keep a lead in check, the most important out to get is the next one, and then we'll worry about the next two after that.
Are you going to ask him to get six outs, which he's never done?
I think in this particular instance, you don't have to worry about the three outs in the ninth inning. You're worrying about right now the three outs in the eighth inning, and you'll get to the ninth inning when you get to the ninth inning.
I don't think you can ask a guy to do something he hasn't done all year.
I'm not asking him to get the three outs in the ninth in that particular situation. I would be asking him to get the three outs in the eighth. And then we'll figure things out from there.
As far as the bunt goes, the hitter that came up hit 184 this year, and he was 0-16 in the series.
Yeah, and Austin Nola was equally as bad. He was 1-18 heading in. You know what I mean? So, like, I know that your odds are stacked, and they're pretty. It's a pretty tough, tall task to ask in that particular situation, but. I can't sacrifice outs to move runners over 90 feet knowing the guy behind him is also an equally bad hitter in the series.
Well, he wasn't 0-16 in the series.
He was 1-18.
Okay. Well, just some thoughts. It wasn't entirely illogical what he did.
Okay. I appreciate the phone call, Jay. Thanks so much for checking in late this evening.
Okay.
Ray, if you can give me a hand. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you can ask a guy to do something he's never done. I agree. A hater's not a six out guy. He's a three out guy. They've always had, when he was with the Brewers, it was Grant Williams and him that they had the opportunity, or Devin Williams and him. Grant Williams is a basketball player with the Boston Celtics. Sorry. It was Devin Williams and him in the back end of the bullpen. I don't disagree to ask him to get six outs. I don't feel that it's unfair though, to ask him to get the most critical out at the most critical time. And then you worry about the next two. Nick Castellanos, yes, he hits lefties well. He was following up. But Nick Castellanos also has not hit particularly well in this series. And he has been an incredible double play magnet. Now, again, I can't ask for double plays. If you're scared to hit into a double play, you're scared to go up to hit. But my point is, if I'm Bob Melvin, the next out is the most critical out in this situation with the premier hitter of the Phillies lineup. That's what I'm trying to get at is it's just I'm taking this one out at a time at this point, and I don't think he did that.
The comparison to me goes back to what we saw on Friday, and we were talking about the management of Rob Thompson and pushing all the right buttons. Alvarado allows a hit to Soto in that eighth inning.
Right.
And guess what? Alvarado's gone. I don't care how good Alvarado's been. You got Machado coming up next. They go to Sir Anthony Dominguez.
I need to get my best pitcher on the mound.
And Sir Anthony gets on the mound. And you know what? Sir Anthony went six outs.
I wasn't asking a guy to get, Dominguez has gotten you, thrown you two innings before. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not asking a guy to do something he's not accustomed to, but I do ask him to get the most paramount outs when you are the paramount guy in your bullpen.
Correct. But what I'm saying is, what was the plan in that moment? The plan right there is to get out Manny Machado.
Right.
Will Sir Anthony be able to go up again and give you another inning? Who cares?
I'm not worried about that inning right now.
It's a whole different game anyways, right. And your plan is entirely changed regardless.
That is why I do not care about who the closer is. I care about who's getting me outs. All right, we got about 30 seconds before we get out of here. I'm going to go to Simon in Center City. Up next on the Fanatic. Simon, I apologize. We have very short time. If you could just give us your spiel real quick and we'll...
Real quick. First of all, I'm so bored out of my skull till Friday.
I feel you. I know. I don't know what to do.
Real quick. One, this is like the Eagles winning a championship because the Eagles were going up against New England. They were the vaunted team.
Yep.
New England. It was Eagles versus New England. Nobody said, how is Nick Foles going to beat New England? Unbeatable. Same thing here with the Astros. They've been six times, in a row winning the National League Championship. That's number one. So it's like the Eagles. Number two, when he brings in Brogdon, and we all like Brogdon, he brought in Brogdon in some pretty important situations. I'm looking at him. You know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing Ryan Madsen.
When
the Phillies won the World Series, Charlie Madsen.
Simon, I apologize. We just got to get out of here. I'm sorry about that. I like the Ryan Madsen comparison. We'll talk to you tomorrow. This was In the Post. We'll talk to you tomorrow on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.